All right, good afternoon, and thank you for coming to my session, which is called Building an End-to-End Silverlight 4 Application. Are you enjoying the day so far? Yes? Great. So we're going to try building an end-to-end application during the next 75 minutes with, of course, Silverlight 4. And as you can see by the subtitle over there, it's going to have something to do with Christmas cards. Christmas comes early this year. I'm going to show that in just a second. I'm going to explain what we're going to do. Let me first introduce myself for the people who don't know me yet. So my name is Gilles Kleren. I'm a Microsoft Regional Director here in Belgium and an MVP for ASP.NET. And in my daily job, I work as .NET architect at Ordina. And I mainly do Silverlight development and WPF development and still some ASP.NET as well. I'm very active in the community. You may know me from Visig, perhaps. I'm also doing other sessions both in Belgium and abroad. I'll be speaking at TechEd in the upcoming edition in November as well. And I've also written a book, which is called Silverlight 4 Data and Services Cookbook, and it's on sale since April. I've also put up my blog as well as my email up there, as well as my Twitter, so you can spam, mail, whatever that you want, follow me, whatever you want to do. I will upload the entire application that we will be looking at on my blog, as well as the slides, so you can download them from there and you can play with it however much you want. So, now what we are going to do during this session is actually building an application. I'm not going to bore you typing in the code. I've already built it up front. So we're going to take a look at some of the aspects that I think are important when it comes to building a real application. It's an actual application that we're going to build. Things like how do we do the wireframe design, the prototype design, the data access, the data binding, custom controls, all these things are important when building a real-life Silverlight application, and we're going to spend some time taking a look at all of these things. Now, we actually put together a small scenario, and the scenario is as follows. There's a company called TDD. In this scenario, TDD is not test-driven development, and some people may do that. This is not TDD. This TDD stands for Turtle Door-to-Door Deliveries. It's an imaginary company that does, like the word says it, door-to-door deliveries. Just like companies like DHL and FedEx, TDD does the same. You can call them, they come and pick up your package, and they deliver it within so many hours on the other side of the world. A typical transport company. And now, what TDD, they're actually at this point rather small. Eh? It's tough for them to fight against the big DHL and FedEx and stuff. So it's hard for them to make a living and to get known in the market. And so they came up with an idea. So their idea is, during the end of the holiday period, they want to make their service more known with the public. And so they came to me, and they asked me to build an application for them. And the application actually consists out of a Christmas card designer. It's not Christmas yet, but if you want to do something about the Christmas period, you have to start it now. And so they came to me the last couple of days, and they asked me to build an application that consists out of a Christmas card designer. So where people can go to, and they can compose a Christmas card, and the card will be branded a bit with some TDD logo, perhaps, and perhaps some small text. And so they want to drive more public to their site, and on the other hand, when people start sending their Christmas cards with this Christmas card application, the receivers will also get some publicity about TDD, and that's their idea. You may know it, some other companies like Coca-Cola, I think, did something similar last year. And so they came to me asking, how can I build this? And I said, well, let's do it in Silverlight 4. And that's what we're going to take a look at during the following, during this session. So these are the actual topics that I think are important when building this application. I'm not going to start the development straight away. I'm first going to think what I'm going to do. That is an important concept. I'm first going to brainstorm about what I'm going to do. I'm going to build a prototype for the people of TDD so we can discuss what I'm actually going to build. I'm going to show that prototype prototype in just a second using Sketchflow. After we have built the wireframe and we have agreed with TDD about what we're going to build, then I'm going to start with the first aspect, and this, in my case, is now some navigation. How am I going to do the navigation inside of my application? Now, TDD has some specific requirements about the Christmas card application. The one thing that is very important for them is that users can really customize their Christmas cards. They want to enable the users to say, well, yeah, you have to be able to take a picture of yourself to make it a personal Christmas card. For some people like me, that's not a good idea, personalizing a Christmas card. And so I can also drag in a standard picture. I must also be able to print it. All these kinds of requirements have been specified by TDD. So that's going to be, we're going to take a look at those requirements and how we can solve them with Silverlight 4 when looking at the designer interface creation. And I'm going to take a look at some controls. Now, Silverlight has a rich set of controls available, both standard default controls as well as customized controls. I'm going to show you how we can customize controls, and we're going to take a look at some included rich controls as well. Now, a very important aspect as well is the accessing of data. And data is a really important asset in a line of business application. This is, in fact, an entire business application. So we're going to take a look at how we can access data in our Silverlight application. And where we have access to that data, Silverlight is a client-side platform, so we'll need some services to access that data. When we have access to the data inside of our Silverlight application, we'll need to bind it. If we have time, the following part is optional, the refactoring to MVVM, to the view model. I'm going to take my application. I'm not going to design it using view model. But if we have time, I'm going to redesign one screen using the view model pattern to show you how we can build better Silverlight applications, code-wise, that is. And in any case, I want to still show you how we can take the application offline so end users can install it on their local machine and using an offline trusted application, how they can also make it possible to export some data to Excel from within my Silverlight application. Sounds great? Okay. So, of course, I'm talking about the application. I think the first part is me showing you the application. So, let me show you my development work and work development labor. Now, this is the application. If you're thinking this looks ugly, the designer track is in the other room. This is my way of designing. I have some clip art. Clip art is, for me, the way that I can design things. So I have put up some clip art in my application. So this is my landing screen, my home page. I click on the start button. And the first screen allows me to enter some basic data. I hope it's visible for everyone. Some basic data, the name of the recipient, the name of the sender, et cetera, et cetera. And as you can see here, they also asked me to include some standard greetings in my Silverlight card. These come from a database because they want to be able to reuse it perhaps next year. And if I'm going to put in a Christmas wish for 2010 now, they may want to change it to become 2011. So they do not want to hard code that inside of the application. So this is going to come from a database. And the same goes, they have also some basic colors, et cetera. These are also coming from a database. In the next screen, the user can enter a basic Christmas text. So I wish you, what do you write on a Christmas card? I wish you a Merry Christmas. That's basically the most important thing, I think. So there we go. I'm not very good at writing Christmas cards, so I think this will do. This is a rich text editor inside of my Silverlight application. For example, I can say, well, yeah, I want to include an image in there as well. So again, the theming, the branding of TDD is in here. It supports a lot of other stuff. For example, I can say I want to do some copying. Silverlight asks me if it's okay to do copying. I can do some pasting, et cetera, et cetera. It does other things. It's exporting as XAML. For example, I can say, well, it has to be right to left, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, that's not this one. Okay, I'm going to put it back on left to right. Now, the next screen is actually the most important one. This is where the users can design their Christmas card. I'm going to take a risk, and I'm going to take a picture of myself using my webcam in my computer. This will look funny. Let's try it. There we go. No loss, please. And If it went all bad, I can also drag in another image. I'm going to show that in just a second. For example, I can drag these things around. I can add in some clip art again, put some Christmas hat on my face there, and et cetera, et cetera. So this is my finished card. I'm happy with it. I'm actually not really happy with it, but anyway. So then the Christmas card is ready. I can also print from here. So Christmas card is ready. We click on next. And now we will actually be sending the Christmas card. I'm not sure if it will work because of the slow internet here. It's now uploading this Christmas card to my server, where a mail will be sent and the Christmas card will be delivered. So this comes, this arrives in my mailbox like something like this, where the Christmas card that I made earlier is created for me. So this is what it normally looks like. So a mail arrives with the finished Christmas card. Okay, so this is the finished application. Let us now take a look at how we can actually build this with Silverlight 4. So the first step in the design process is actually designing the application. And by designing, I do not mean the graphical design, but I mean the actual wireframe of the application. A prototype has to be made of the application. And you heard about it already in the keynote. There was a nice demo of Sketchflow there. Now, for the people who don't know Sketchflow, how do you normally do prototyping or wireframes, or perhaps how do your analysts on your team do it? They use a tool called Visio. And Visio is a great tool. It's a nice tool, really. It's a good tool. But basically, with Visio, you are limited to some basic controls, so you can import other stencil files, etc. But the end result of designing a wireframe or a prototype in Visio is something that you can print, and you can go to the customer and say, well, dear customer, here is what I designed. It's a lot of pages with some text on it and some default some design screens on there, but that's where it stops. That's okay. That's fine. Now, we can do better. And with Silverlight and WPF, we can use Sketchflow. So let's throw away the Visio for now, and let's move in Sketchflow. And here is my mock-up, my prototype of my application that I designed with Sketchflow. As you can see, this is the Christmas card screen where I have put some basic image and some Christmas trees, Christmas balls with my hat, etc. At the bottom, you can see the navigation, the Sketchflow map that shows all the screens inside of my Silverlight application. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time on Sketchflow because basically in the keynote, you already heard a bit about it. Now, Sketchflow is part of Expression Blend. It comes with Blend. It's already there in Blend 3, but it's, of course, still there in Expression Blend 4. And Expression Blend is part of the Expression Suite of Microsoft, so the Design Studio of Microsoft. Now, what exactly is Sketchflow? Well, just analyze the word, Sketchflow. It's two things. It's a sketch and it's flow. So the sketch part, what we're going to do with Sketchflow is actually sketch out, make out a prototype of my application. The sketchy part is actually also something really cool Microsoft came up with. The applications that we design in Sketchflow have a sketched look. It looks as if it was drawn with some pencil. I think that's a very good thing. Because when you talk to your customer and say, well, dear customer, it's going to take 100 days to build your application. And then you go ahead and you build your application in Sketchflow, the mock-up. And if it wouldn't look sketched, the customer would say after 2 days, but the application is finished already. I think you all know how customers are. So that's a great, brilliant thing that Microsoft came up with. If we make it look sketched, it's all going to look very prototype-y. That's what they actually wanted to achieve with that. Now, apart from the fact that we can design screens with Sketchflow, a really cool thing is also that we can flow through the screens. And that's the second part of the work, the flow part. Sketchflow actually builds a Silverlight application in the back. It's nothing but a Silverlight application that you do some dragging and dropping inside of the designer in Expression Sketchflow. And that's about it. It designs a Silverlight application. But because of the fact that it is a Silverlight application, you can do navigation through your pages. You can select items in the drop-down. And what you do then, you deploy that on a server. You call your customer and say, well, I have uploaded my application. Try it out. Test it out. And this involves everyone into the design process, making the application that's actually going to be built a lot better. Because both I and the customer, I am the customer, I'm not the customer. So me as a developer and the customer, we know what we're talking about. We're actually thinking about the same thing. I'm not doing something that the customer has a completely different idea of. So it involves everyone into the design, and we have a working application before we actually start the development. This is an overview of a Sketchflow interface. You can see on the right, on the left for you, some sketchy interface. At the bottom, you have the Sketchflow map. I'm going to show it in just a second. The customers that want to test the application have the ability to make annotations. So they can say, well, this button shouldn't be there. It should be on the left, for example. So they make an annotation. You can take that back into your Sketchflow, and you can see what the user said. It's also possible to integrate that with Team Foundation or with SharePoint, so you can make items of it in a SharePoint or in a Team Foundation environment. And if it is important for you to actually generate documents out of what was created, you can do so. It supports document generation as well. So let me quickly show you what I have developed as the wireframe for this application. I actually did it this way because I'm actually convinced that building it first is actually the way to go. And so we actually know what we're going to build. So I'm opening Expression Blend Sketchflow here. This is my my first screen, the screen with the welcome text on there and nice clip art. And here at the bottom, I have my, let me zoom in a bit, I have my Sketchflow map, which contains an overview of the screens. For example, I have Wizard Step 1 here. That was a screen on which we can select the recipient and the standard greeting, etc., and the color. So all the screens have been designed up first. And in my screen also, I can say, well, this screen, that has to navigate to some other screen. In this case, it has to be Wizard Step 2. So you can integrate the navigation out of the box already. When my design was done, I simply deployed it somewhere, in this case on my local machine, and I called the customer and said, well, TDD people, do you think this is what we want to build? And then we have an iterative process to come to a final mock-up, a final prototype. So this is what I created. I have some basic navigation here. This is going to be the rich text editor. Then we have the Christmas card designer, as you see here. And then when the application is done, we have the send screen with the button that will send the application to the server, the Christmas card to the server. Okay, so this is the Sketchflow player. As said, people can, end users can make annotations in here that we can import back into the Silverlight application. So now we have the wireframe ready. We know what we're going to build. Let's now take a look at building the actual implementation of the application. Oops, that was too fast. So the first thing that came to mind when I wanted to build this application is where I'm going to start from. As you saw with the application demo, it's more or less like a wizardy interface. Screen 1, screen 2, screen 3, and then sending it. So a very important aspect is how can I navigate from screen 1 to screen 2, etc., etc. Now, in Silverlight 2, for the people that did Silverlight 2 development, they may remember that in Silverlight 2, doing navigation was not something that was foreseen out of the box. You had to do it yourself. There was no built-in navigation system in Silverlight 2. But with Silverlight 3 came the Silverlight Navigation application, and that is still somehow improved in Silverlight 4. Now, what does this navigation application actually do? Well, it adds a few new controls to Silverlight. The first one is the frame. The frame, you can compare something like an iframe. It hosts Silverlight pages. And don't be scared, it's not an iframe. It's simply the concept of it that is more or less the same as with an iframe. So the frame is actually the control that will host pages. It won't host user controls. It's actually hosting something new, and that's a page. So instead of building user controls in your Silverlight application, you are going to be building pages. And putting controls and all the other stuff is exactly the same on such a page. Now, when you do navigation, when you use the navigation application, you can click on a hyperlink button and you can say on your page, well, now navigate to this screen, now navigate to that screen, etc., etc. So what you end up with is something like a master page with a frame in there. And that frame will host the pages and that those are hosting the content of your page, of your application. That's what I had. So the menu at the top, that was in my master page. I had a frame, and in my side of my frames, I had the home page, the wizard step one, the wizard step two. I'm going to show that in just a second. Another nice thing of the navigation application is that it's integrating with the browser history. Normally, when you have a Silverlight application, you navigate to a page that hosts a zap file, and that's it. If you click back in your browser, you're back on the previous page. Now, with Silverlight 4, it is possible to, with a navigation application, and that's possible with Silverlight 3 as well, to actually make content within, or make the pages within your Silverlight application URI addressable. So you can, you'll see that when I click on the next button, or the next button, or the start button, it's actually entering journal entries inside of the history of my browser. So I can copy that link, I can paste it inside of my in an email or whatever, and users can click on it and they will immediately arrive on that page within the Silverlight application. The navigation service, perhaps a small word on that, is simply the class that does the actual navigation. If you do not have a reference inside of your pages, so if you have a frame with page 1, page 2, and page 3 does not know about the frame in which it is hosted anymore. So if you want to do navigation within that frame, you simply use the navigation service to do all the navigation. Say, I want to navigate to page 4 or whatever. A navigation context allows you to pass data from page 1 to page 2, similar to an ASP environment in which you say, I want page 1 to be a master page with a grid, with all kinds of customers or whatever. And when I click on a customer, I'm going to page 2, which hosts the details of the page. So then I'm passing the selected customer, and that I can do in Silverlight as well, using the navigation context. It allows me to get the selected user or whatever from the query string. And a last aspect is the URI mapper. The URI mapper allows me to make friendly URLs out of my otherwise perhaps ugly-looking URLs. Instead of showing slash views slash home.xaml or wizardstep1.xaml, I can simply say map home.xaml to home, and other URI mappings are, of course, possible as well. So you can make friendly URLs in order not to reveal the actual structure of your Silverlight application. Now let's take a look at this navigation application in the demo. So there we go. So this is the code of my application. If we take a look at the structure here on the left, on the right for you. So this is actually my hosting page. That's the main page.xaml. There we go. The main page is hosting. The main page is hosting a frame that I'm going to zoom into. There we go. So it's hosting a navigation frame inside of a border, but that's not relevant here. That frame refers to the source. The initial source is the home page, and then inside of that navigation frame, I have a URI mapper, and that's the friendly URI creating thing. So the URI mapper contains a few URI mappings. In this case, it's simple. It's only a demo. If there is nothing specified, I want you to go to views slash home.xaml. And if something is specified, whatever string is specified, go and look for that view inside of the folder views slash, replace the page name here with the entered string.xaml. So inside of my views folder, let's take a look there. So here I have my views folder. For example, I have the wizard step 1 XAML page, which is, as you can see here at the top, a navigation page. So instead of a user control, it is now a page. These can be hosted inside of my frame. For the rest, it's identical to a Silverlight user control, apart from the fact that, for example, when I want to click on the next link, so to go to the wizard screen 2, this is a hyperlink button, and that refers to, or that wants to navigate to wizard step 2. So that wizard step 2 is then pasted in this page name here, and it is replaced to go to the actual real wizard page 2, and that's this one. So I think we're good with our navigation. That suffices for my application. I can do whatever I need with that, and so we are actually we're actually okay with the navigation. One thing I want to show you still is the journal entries that are created in the browser history. So when I click on start here, so I'm actually navigating to As you can see, here is at step one. I can copy paste that link. I can paste it in Firefox or another browser or in an email, and I can send that to someone. And when he clicks on that link, he will arrive on this exact page as well. And these are entered as you can see here, as entries in my history of my browser. Okay, so we're good with the navigation. That's fine. Now the next thing is creating the designer for the Christmas cards. That's a lot of work, actually. The biggest chunk of code is actually located in this Christmas card designer. If you remember correctly, TDD asked me to do the following inside of my application. They want to integrate with the webcam, so to take a picture, to create the Christmas card. They also want drag and drop. Not a drag and drop of the Santa hat and the Christmas tree, but actually allowing the users to drag an image from outside of the Silverlight application into the Silverlight application. That's possible. I haven't shown that yet. I'm going to show that when we take a second look at the screen. They also want to integrate printing support. They want to allow the users to print their Christmas cards. Perhaps they don't want to email it. They may want to print it out. So that they also want to integrate inside of the application. And finally, what they also want is integrating right-click support, something that wasn't possible in previous versions of Silverlight as well. But these are the things that needed to be created for the Christmas card designer. Let's take a look at those in detail. The first one is the webcam. Since Silverlight has arrived at version 4, it has support for hardware. It can access hardware, both webcams and microphones. It can access even more hardware. We're going to take a look at that at the end of the presentation. So it can access hardware. It can access a webcam. It can access a microphone. It can access the raw byte stream coming from those devices. That means that whatever you want to do with it, you can do with it. If you want to save it, that's fine. If you want to encode it, a video file, for example, do a WMV, that's fine. If you want to create an MP3 of some audio file, it's possible. It can also be used, as you saw in the demo already, to take pictures. That's what I did. I used it to the webcam to actually take a picture of myself. Now, the webcam support, the webcam actually can only be accessed after giving a prompt to the user, asking the user if he really wants that the application gets access. I think that's quite normal. Assume that you're building a banner for hosting on some third-party site. If that banner would automatically get access to the webcam, I think you would be in for some privacy lawsuits, because you could capture all the video coming in from everyone arriving on a third-party site. So all the webcam interaction only is possible after clicking OK on a prompt, and that prompt also can only appear after the user has done some interaction with the application. So that means that in the page load of the first page, you cannot access the webcam. It has to be a click on a button or selection in the drop-down or whatever that actually starts the webcam integration. It cannot start any earlier. We're going to show that. I'm going to show the code for all these four things together. So we're going to first take a look at the other three. The second one is drag and drop. Now, drag and drop of items within the Silverlight application, that was possible with Silverlight 2 already. You could pick up an item with the mouse left button down, move it around with the mouse move, and drop it somewhere else. That's not the drag and drop where I'm talking about here, what I'm talking about here. This drag and drop allows me to go to open my pictures folder on my machine and drag a picture onto the Silverlight application, or drag any file onto the Silverlight application. One file is possible, more than one file is possible. It's not possible to drag an entire folder onto Silverlight application just yet. Now, when you do that, Silverlight gets read access to the files that you have dropped on the surface. It's basically the same as doing an open file dialog, and Silverlight gets read access to that file. What else do I have to tell? This also works on the Mac. I'm specifically saying it because people might think this doesn't work on the Mac because it's more an OS feature, perhaps. This works on the Mac as well. There's one specific feature, and we're coming to that feature later on, that doesn't work on the Mac, so I'm specifically saying that this works on the Mac. This is supported through the UI element class. The UI element, if you've done some Silverlight development, is high in the hierarchy that now has the allow drop property. If that is set to true, you can drag any item onto the Silverlight application. Okay, the next one is printing. I think printing, before Silverlight 4 came out, was the most requested feature. With Silverlight 2, it was completely impossible to do printing. I've looked for it a lot, but there was no way to do printing. The only thing that you could print was doing a print screen inside of your browser and print that, but I don't think that's what end users want. So that was something that in Silverlight 2 was totally impossible. In Silverlight 3, there was something called the Writable Bitmap API. Now, the Writable Bitmap API allowed me to save the content of a Silverlight control, for example, a canvas and all its children, to an image. That was somehow a way to do printing of what you see on the screen. You could save it. You couldn't directly print it from the Silverlight application, but you could save it. Now, in Silverlight 4, Microsoft has come clear with the printing stuff, and they integrated entire printing namespace inside of Silverlight. As you can see, there is a system windows printing namespace, and the most important class there is the print document class. That, as the word says it, can do printing. Now, what can we actually print? We have total control over what we want to print. If we want to print the entire user control, if we want to print the entire Silverlight control, that's possible. You simply say, I want to print the entire control. But you can do more fine, have more fine-grained control over what you want to print. You can say, for example, yeah, I just want to print that specific grid or canvas. As you saw me doing with the Silverlight, with the demo application, I was dragging items onto the interface, on the Christmas card interface. When I do printing, I do not want to print the entire user control, the entire Silverlight control. I only want to print the Christmas card. And that's possible. I can specify what control I want to print. And finally, I can also print a dynamic tree. For example, let's say that you have an application that is very text intensive, but the text, for example, is inside of a control that has a background. And when you want to make a printer-friendly version of that, you do not want to print the entire control, but you want to get the text out, let's say. What you can then do in that specific case, you can create a printer-friendly version, so that's a dynamic tree. You build up some controls in memory, and you send those to the printer. Behind the scenes, the printing in Silverlight 4 is still the writable bitmap API. It is still the writable bitmap API that is rendering it as an image and then sending it to the printer. That has one consequence. If you print to a PDF, it's not the text that you have printed is not selectable because it's basically printing a page. An image to the page. And finally, right-clicking. Right-clicking was, in previous versions of Silverlight, not possible either. There was some work around using JavaScript, but I think nobody actually wanted to do that. So now it is imported inside of, it is added to the Silverlight platform as a new feature. So right-clicking, just the same as left-clicking on any element, is supported through the mouse right button down and the mouse right button up events on the UI element class. Normally, what Silverlight would do is it would show you the Silverlight menu option. What you have to do if you want to do right-clicking, you have to suppress that. So in the mouse right button down, what you're going to do is say, don't show that Silverlight menu option. Yeah? Setting an e.handle to true, meaning Silverlight, you don't have to show it. And in your mouse right button up, you can do whatever you want. You can show a context menu or whatever right-click action you want to do. So four nice features that make my designer actually complete. Let's take a look at how I coded them in the designer interface of my application. So, I'm going to first show you the application once more. So, I'm going to skip those screens. So, taking a picture I already showed you. If I want, I can open the My Pictures folder, and I have here in the sample pictures, I put in a Christmas tree here to stay in the same atmosphere. So I dragged it in, as you saw, I simply dragged it into my onto my interface and it automatically put it inside of the canvas. I could also have used a file open dialog that would have given the same result. Then I put in some other Christmas trees there. And now I want to print this. Perhaps I first, I'm saying, well, there's no such thing as a flying Christmas tree, so I'm going to remove this one. So I'm doing a right click and I have a context menu appearing that allows me to delete it. And now I'm going to do a print preview. I'm going to send it to a PDF writer here. It is an event-based model, so I'm saying the printing is done. Okay, So it's sent to the printer, card preview, and normally I should have my card preview somewhere here. As you can see, my card is ready to send by regular mail. Okay. Now, how did I actually do this? Let's take a look at the code for this. So let me open my card creator. That's this one. The first thing I want to start with is, let's say, the drop. Let's say the drop. So I'm going to search for the drop. Okay, where is it? It's nice if it doesn't show it, really. Where is the drop? Ah, there it is. So I have here a canvas. That's a drawing canvas. That's the one on which I'm dropping all my stuff. And on that drawing canvas, I set the allow drop property to true. That's a sign for Silverlight to say, well, I can drop items on this canvas. When I drop something on it, I'm raising this event, and I'm handling that in an event handler. So I'm handling the drop event. In that drop event, I'm saying, I'm not going to go deep into in the code. As said, you will be able to download all the code, and you can use it in your own samples if you want to. So in here, I'm getting in, inside of the drop event, I'm getting in the file or files that I have dropped on my Silverlight application. So I'm getting them in via the e.data, coming in as an idata object. And then I'm saying, well, these files, the file or files that I have dropped on my interface, are available as a file info array, as you can see here. So I have read-only access inside of my Silverlight application for these files. I check if they those are a JPEG file, and then I create an image on my interface. Okay, so that's about it for the drop. Let's now take a look first at the printing. Let me scroll all the way to the top. It's quite a lot of code here. So printing is supported because of the print document class that is available in Silverlight 4. It has an event-driven model, let's say. So what I mean by that is, I'm going to stop running this so I can put it on several screens, several lines. So I'm saying here, when something is calling the print method on the print document, it's going to call the print page event. And in that print page event, I'm going to say what has to be printed. There's also a begin print and end print that you can use to do things with the control that you're going to print. For example, here, when the printing is done, the end print is going to be erased, and I'm going to erase a message box. So whenever I do the printing, as you can see here, I'm specifying what I have to print. So in the e.pageVisual, I'm specifying what exactly I want to print. In this case, it's a grid containing the canvas and the text below it. Then, the right-clicking. How do I do the right-clicking? Well, that's this code, mostly. So, as said, you have to suppress the appearance of the standard Silverlight menu option. You can do that in your mouse right button down. So let's first take a look at the mouse right button down. Here it is. So this is what happens. This code is executed whenever I click on one of the mouse right button, on one of the images with the mouse right button down event. I'm specifying a lambda here that says ev.handled is true. This is a sign for Silverlight not to show the standard Silverlight menu option, but to allow you to do whatever you want. Going back to the mouse right event, that's what you see here. So in the mouse right button up, for any UI element on which I have enabled it, I can do whatever I want. In this case, I'm using the Silverlight context menu to show. So it's simply a menu option that I've created and allows me to delete my picture. And the final thing I have to show you is the webcam stuff. Let me zoom out a bit and go to it. There it is, capture source. So that's this one. So as said, interacting with a webcam allows me to do something with my application. Requires me to do something with my application. I cannot start the webcam on the page load. I have to do an interaction with it. So here I'm doing the start button click, the button that I have to click. Then the webcam starts taking a picture. Here I'm checking if the application already has access. So that remembers if it has access. If it doesn't have access, I'm going to request the access right now. And if the user doesn't allow it, it's basically going to say, well, we cannot continue. And there's nothing to do. The user doesn't allow me to use the Silverlight the webcam inside of this application. If it does allow it, then this code is executed. That's basically the capture source. The capture source is the class that does the capturing for you. We set the video capture device of this capture source, in this case, to the selected value in the drop-down as a video capture device. And then we use that capture source as the video brush. And so then we have the running Christmas card designer. There we go. So this is what happens when I take the webcam. I have to click first. Normally, Silverlight would show me a prompt. I have set this application can use already the webcam, so that's fine. So it doesn't show the prompt again. I'm going to remove myself from the screen because that's a very weird effect, seeing myself from there. So. Okay. So with that, my Christmas card designer is more or less ready. And I think the people of TDD will be happy seeing it. Okay. Now, Silverlight is very rich when it comes to the controls that come with the package. And having rich controls is one of the basic assets for building line-of-business applications, I think. So out of the box, Silverlight has a lot of rich controls. Inside of my application, I've used only a few of the ones that come by default with the Silverlight app, with the Silverlight install. Things like a date picker I have a combo box. I have also the rich text box that you saw on Wizard Step 2. I'm going to show that that code in more detail in the following demo. But the rich text box is one of the nice controls that came with Silverlight 4. It allows me to do rich text editing, which was difficult to do in previous versions of Silverlight. Now, a lot of controls are out of the box available that may not be enough for you. And I can agree. You may have different expectations, different controls that you need inside of your applications. Now, a first alternative is taking a look at the Silverlight toolkit. The Silverlight control toolkit contains a lot of extra controls, and it is available for free via silverlight.codeplex.com. So codeplex.com, as you may know, is the open source website of Microsoft, and the Silverlight toolkit is no exception. You can download the Silverlight toolkit with all the source of the controls, and you can take a look at the source, you can change it however you want. You cannot commit it directly back to Codeplex. That's not possible because it's a project that is committed, that's worked on by the people of Microsoft themselves. But you can suggest changes, or you can suggest bugs that you find in the controls. There are a lot of controls. I think over 40 controls are available. Things like a data form, for example, is there. A data form is basically a detailed screen of data. And when you want to, instead of having a data grid, you can have the data form, which creates all the fields, as you may be able to see on the screenshot there, out of the box for you. It has charting support. A lot of charts are available. And it also has theming support. I'm actually using one of the themes inside of my application. The buttons you saw at the bottom, the left, the next, and the start button, and whatever, those are themed using the theming of the Silverlight control toolkit. It may not be in, there's not actually more stuff in there. Panels, there are new panels like the dock panel, the wrap panel. I think you can all guess what those are doing. So the wrap panel is basically when the size becomes too small in width, it will start a new line. So it's wrapping its contents. The dock panel is docking its contents. So if you want to build Silverlight if you want to build Visual Studio in Silverlight, then you would start with the dock panel. So Visual Studio is basically a menu at the top and some status bar and a lot of menus that will be a dock panel, more or less. It has other controls, the busy indicator, expander, accordion control, fun things like a rating control, a time picker. I suggest you take a look at it. There's a lot of things to discover in there. Again, it is with the source code and it's free, so it's a good learning tool for learning how to build custom controls. That may not be what you need. Perhaps on a side note, all the major control vendors, such as Stellaric, also have extended suites of controls available for Silverlight. So if those two parts of control sets actually are not enough for what you need, you may take a look at third-party controls, and there may some other stuff that you could use. But still, you may be even more picky. And you say, well, all those nice controls, they just don't cut it for me. I want to do it myself. Well, that's fine. Silverlight is really, really easy to build custom controls yourself. Basically, what you do most of the time, you can build custom controls from scratch as well, but most of the time what you'll be doing is customizing, let's say, templating or skinning existing controls using, most of the time, the parts and states model. Now, the parts and states model is a bit too complicated. It's not complicated, but it's a bit too much to explain here during this session. It basically boils down to the fact that controls define parts and some states. For example, a checkbox. It defines a checked state, an unchecked state, an indeterminate state, an enabled state, disabled state, and some others. You may want a checkbox that doesn't have the check mark in it, but you may want an exclamation mark, for example. You do not have to create a control from scratch. You say, well, I want to edit the existing control. I want to edit the state checked in the check mark. That you can do using the parts and states model. You simply say, that state, I want to override how it looks. I want to skin it. I want to retemplate it. And that's an easy thing to do. Also, it's very easy because it is supported entirely by Blend. Blend picks up the states and the parts as well that a control contains. And I think this is the interface basically here. So Blend shows me the states that the control has, and I can override what that state looks like. And at the bottom you see there a styled button, or a skin button actually. So in fact, instead of having the gray rectangle look, it has a more or less rounded rectangle, bluish, greenish look. A lot stylier, a lot classier than the standard button. So a lot of options available for us if we want to customize how the controls will look. Now, I don't have time to show you all of these types of controls. What I do have the time for is I'm going to show you the rich text box in some more detail. So the rich text box, by default, doesn't have all the buttons that I showed you that I have there at the top. So these are developed by myself on the top there. So they are not there by default. It's simply, the rich text box is simply like a text box, only the text box itself, but it can host custom content. So it can host images, it can host other controls. You can do whatever you want with the text. For example, here I specify this to be bold. And I can also see the XAML out of the box. So basically, you can also save this. You can save this to a file, import it later on. That's all possible with the rich text box. Okay. So, this is quite a lot of code, in fact, but the code is all quite similar. So I'm going to show you only, for example, the bold one. So how do I put my text bold? That's this line of these lines of code here. So when I click on the bold button, I'm going to check if I have actually selected something. If I have selected something, I'm going to check. And these lines of code are a bit too long. I'm going to put on three lines. Oops. So I'm going to check if the selection, the font weight property of the selection is normal. If it is normal, I'm putting it to bold, and vice versa. So I'm putting it normal when it is bold. All the manipulations on the text are, as said, quite similar, so I'm not going to go in detail there. I don't have the time for that. Take a look at the code if you want to have some more examples of manipulating the text in the rich text box control. So, the next part is probably the most important one in a Silverlight scenario, and that's accessing data. Now, I think you all know by now that Silverlight is a client-side platform. That means that all the code that we run runs on the client side. There is no ability for Silverlight to go to the connect to the server with a connection string to a database. That's not possible. It cannot connect with a local database because there is no local database support in Silverlight. Why is that? Because there is no AD.NET available whatsoever. So no link to SQL, no data readers, no data sets, which is a good thing. So, we still need data in our Silverlight application. What we can do is using services. Because of the fact that it has to use services for its data access, it has a rich support of services. And these are the options that are supported in Silverlight for as of now. So the most basic one is, of course, the most, perhaps basic is not a good word, the default one should be WCF, Windows Communication Foundation, which should be your default for any data access since .NET 3.0, service access since 3.0. Windows Communication Foundation is richly supported in Silverlight, and as I said, it should be the default. I'm going to come back to WCF. I'm going to show the demo with WCF as well. ASMX, standard web services, are supported in Silverlight as well. If you have a legacy service layer with ASMX, Silverlight can communicate with it without a problem. Silverlight also supports REST, representational state transfer. Very popular service type these days. All kinds of Web 2.0 sites like Flickr and Twitter and YouTube, Facebook, they expose part of their functionality using a REST API. REST boils down to exchanging purely the data that it needs to exchange. It can communicate using XML or some using JSON. It's a lot more compact than what is exchanged between WCF and ASMX, which are SOAP messages. So it's a lot more compact, and probably that's one of the reasons of its success. It's simply the data that has to be exchanged. It also a lot. It's very easy to do cross-platform. So REST is a really important one in that's supported in Silverlight as well. So if you want to access YouTube or Flickr or whatever, you can do that using REST services in Silverlight. Sockets are also supported. We're not going to go in there. Sockets are, as the word says it, lower level, exchanging purely the bytes. It supports duplex communication, real duplex communication, so both sides can start the communication in a duplex scenario with sockets. RIA services are a framework that's specifically designed for Silverlight. On top of WCF, so it's actually WCF RIA service, but the rectangle was a bit too small to put in WCF RIA services. It's a separate framework that comes with Silverlight 4. It was already available more or less with Silverlight 3, but in Silverlight 4, it's entirely supported. And it should be perhaps one of the things that you look at when you start a new business line of business application with Silverlight. It's a really nice framework to build and to access services. I don't have time, and I didn't write this application using WCF RIA services, but do take a look at them because they are worth your time. Syndication, a small one, RSS is also supported, so that's basically some XML. And also supported is WCF Data Services. WCF Data Services are not specifically designed for Silverlight, but they can be used from Silverlight. They more or less fall back on REST, but there is a client library that allows me to access my data model over a REST API. I don't have time to go there, but it's a nice framework and it's supported well from Silverlight as well. Now, communicating with a service, as said, if you have to create the services yourself, do it in WCF. Can also be done in ASMX. WCF RIA services as well is built on top of ASMX. On top of WCF. So all these things boil down to that they are built on the same stack as WCF. It should be your default choice. It's also the one that has the most options. The communication can be done in a binary XML format, meaning that the exchange data is smaller. It supports duplex communication as well over HTTP. So if you have to push data from your service to your Silverlight client, that is possible with WCF as well. How do you now connect to a service? Well, it's always the same the same steps that you have to follow. The first thing is you create a service. There is not much, there is in fact almost no difference between creating a WCF service for non-Silverlight scenarios than there is for Silverlight scenarios. You have two options, creating a Silverlight-enabled WCF service or a regular WCF service. If you do a regular WCF service, the one thing that you have to change is change it to a basic HTTP binding. Silverlight does not support the WS HTTP binding. You implement your service. let Visual Studio create a proxy for you, and then you can write code to communicate with your service. There's nothing particularly different than building a service or accessing a service without Silverlight. One very important thing, or actually two important things, are the following. All communication with services in Silverlight takes place asynchronously. So we connect with the service in an asynchronous manner, and we define a callback that will be executed when the call returns. That is done because otherwise the UI thread would be blocking. So while Silverlight is communicating with the service, the UI thread, your browser, would be blocked while waiting for the response. That wouldn't be a good thing, so all the communication is asynchronous. Secondly, if accessing a service that is not hosted in the same domain as a Silverlight application, Silverlight will block the call. That might be an issue. That is because of security reasons. Now, if the service, however, deploys a client access policy file or a cross-domain file, basically a file that allows client applications to connect with the service in a cross-domain way, Silverlight will allow the call. So if you want to access Twitter, you won't be able to do that out of the box with a Silverlight application, because Twitter does not have such a file deployed. What you need to do is then build your own service layer in between, in the same domain, let Silverlight connect with that, and let that service connect with Twitter, and all the traffic goes through that service. That is possible. If you are, however, running a trusted out-of-browser application, it will not do that check for that file. I'm coming back to that later in the next point, actually. So let me quickly show you how we can access a service. So I have two services inside of my application, a card data service and a card mail service. The card mail service is, like the word says it, doing the mailing. The card data service is doing the access of data. So as said, TDD asked me to do the standard greetings, to put them in a database so they can change them later on without having me to recompile the application. That's fine. So I put them in I put those in the service, in database behind the service actually. And so I created my service like I would do it normally with WCF. I have a service contract, and inside of my service contract I have two operations defined, marked with the operation contract attribute. Then they return card greetings, a list of card greetings, and card greeting is a data contract that you can see over here. So the data contract defines the data that is going over the line. All the members have, in this case, the data member attribute, so they will both be sent inside of the data contract. And my service implement, whoops, that's a bit too large. So these are my service. This is actually accessing the database. I don't have a database really implemented here. I hard-coded them, but normally you would go out to a database to get those standard greetings. Then, in my Silverlight application, I create a service reference. This creates for me a proxy, and that proxy I can use inside of my Silverlight application. So in the wizard step one, I have a load data method, and that load data method will perform the call to my service. The first thing it's doing is instantiating the proxy as a card data service client, and then I'm doing the asynchronous call. I have two asynchronous calls here. The second line here is doing the actual call to the service. As you see, it ends with the word async. And then this one is the callback. It's defining the callback on completion of the call to the service. So what I'm saying here, when the call is completed, execute this code, which sets the results. And the results are, let's see if we can make that a bit bigger, are available as an observable collection of card greetings, and I bind those to the combo box by setting the item source. Okay, so we now have access to our data. We need to bind it still. We need to bind that data. Binding data is a really important concept, not only to build line of business applications, but also to support the MVVM pattern. Now, what exactly is data binding? Well, it's basically an infrastructure that allows you to bind properties of data objects to properties of controls. So imagine you have a person object, and that defines a first name property. What you can do is bind, using the data binding engine, that first name property of that person instance to a text property of a text block. That's what you see there. On the in the green one there, we have the data object. It has nothing to do with data access. It's an in-memory object that can come from a service call, for example, but it's basically an object in memory, a data object in memory. And it defines a few properties. And the data binding engine will allow me to bind those properties to properties of controls. It also does synchronization and conversion. I'm coming back to that in just a second. Now, how do we do data binding? Well, that's XAML data binding. As you can see there at the top, we have defined what is going to be the target. That's a text block. The text property is going to be the target property. And then I'm defining a markup extension here, specifying the binding. The binding of the text is going to be, the text of the text block is going to be bound to the first name property on my source object. Now, a lot of times, what is missing in this one? We are not specifying where the data is coming from. We are not saying it comes from that object or that object. We haven't specified like the source of the binding. Most of the time, we are going to be using the one that you see there, the data context. The data context falls back on the fact that all XAML is hierarchical XML. So imagine you have a grid with many controls in there, and they all have to be bound to that same person object. Instead of defining the source on each and every of those controls, we simply define the data context of the entire grid to that person object. And all the controls within that data grid can now access that data context as its source of data. You can also use element bindings and source bindings. I'm not going to go there, but the one that you use most is the data context. Now, data can flow in two ways, two-way and one time. Now, in the previous slide, I said Silverlight supports automatic synchronization. Normally, what the binding will do is it's binding to the source object. If that source object is changing its data, Silverlight will be notified of that. It will see that the data has changed, and it will automatically update if the binding is specified as a one-way binding. So the source changes, then the UI will automatically be updated as well. A two-way binding allows me to enter some data and send that back to the source. That's also possible. And a one-time binding is, if you do not want that synchronization happening, you can say, well, only get it initially and then stop with it. Now, getting those automatic synchronizations is only possible if your source object defines an interface, or implements an interface, I should say, and that's the iNotify property changed interface. So the iNotify property changed defines one event, property changed event, and when Silverlight notices that your object that you're binding to implements this interface, it will register for the raising of that event on that object, and when it is raised, it will automatically update the UI. It also exists for collections in the form of the iNotify collection changed interface. The final thing is converters. I think we saw a converter this morning in the keynote as well. A converter basically gives you a hook in the data binding process. Let's say the data coming back from the database is an amount. So it's going to be a double value somewhere. But you want to display that with a euro sign. What you can do is use a converter that takes that value, prepends it with a euro sign, and then sends it through to the UI. So a converter is like a simple, it's a class that the data binding will pass through when going from source to target, or eventually also from target to source. Validation is also supported, but I'm not going to show that in this example anymore. So one more important thing, that's this one, data templates. Data templates are XAML that is going to be spit out for every data bind item in a collection control, like a list control here. So instead of simply showing each item as a line of text, it's going to show them here as a rectangle. Because I have re-templated, let's say, the item control. So I'm saying here, instead of having some text in there, make it a rectangle with a specific width and a specific height, and all of these are bound to my original item. Now let me show you the data binding.
So let me show you the screen first. So this screen is data bound. These fields are data bound to a specific object. This is a list box, sorry, a comma box that is bound to a list of greetings, and the second one, this one, is also bound, and that has a data template applied to it with a rectangle containing the color. Okay, so how is this built? That's wizard step one. So my text boxes, as you can see them here, whoops. These are my text boxes, that the receiver name and the receiver email. They are bound to a property, receiver name. As you can see, there is no source specified. So let's take a look in the code behind. In the code behind, there is a cart model, which is a basic class, a data object that is defined inside of my application. I do a hard coding of the values here, of the property values here. And then I specify the cart detail grid as the data context, I'm specifying the cart model as the data context for my entire cart detail grid. That means that all controls within that grid, so that's this grid here, can access that specific cart model instance as their data source. So they can bind to that item, to that cart model. I'm not going to show you the data template. You can take a look at that code for yourself. So I think we have 9 minutes left. I hope you're not mad at me because I'm going to skip the MVVM part. I'm going to show you taking things out of browser. Some people are now mad at me. So sorry. If you have questions about the MVVM, we'll take them afterwards. So taking this out of browser. Since Silverlight 3, it is possible to take a Silverlight application out of browser. Out of browser means running it without having your browser open, installing it locally on the machine, so caching the ZAP file, and using it even when you're not connected to the internet. Silverlight 4 enhanced that model quite a bit. Several features have been added. One of the things you can change, one of the things that you can do is now change the size of, and the location of the window. That's something that you can do. It also supports showing toast windows, so little windows that pop up, for example, in Outlook, that's supported. And you can also show HTML now out of the box inside of an out-of-browser application. That's new in Silverlight 4. On top of that, Silverlight also supports trusted applications. Trusted applications are a new way of doing out-of-browser. These applications require higher trust, so they get higher permissions, but they require higher trust of the user. They can be installed using a certificate, so it's advised that you use a certificate for those. And when you are building an application that requires trust, you have a lot of extra permissions on the system. These are the permissions that a trusted application is getting. So it can talk with a service cross-domain without there being a check for, without doing the cross-domain check. So there doesn't have to be a client access policy. So that means that a trusted out-of-browser application can access Twitter without any intermediate service. It can directly connect to Twitter, even though Twitter is not specifying a cross-domain file. It can also accept keyboard in a full screen mode. That's something that's not possible with a standard Silverlight application. It cannot accept keyboard input from in full screen. It can access local files without asking you any permission for it. So it can access the My Pictures, the My Documents folder, and two others, the My Videos and the My Music. It has full rights on them. It can write to them, it can read them, it can do whatever it wants with them. And finally, and that's a really important one, it can work with COM components. I'm coming back to the COM component part in just a second. Let me quickly show you how I can take my application out of browser. So this is my application now running in browser. We've seen that. What I can do is on my application, in my application properties, project properties, I can specify this application to be enabled to run out of browser. Here I can specify where it's going to be located, what's going to be its initial size, some standard icons, and whether or not it requires elevated trust to run out of browser. When I run it now, Visual Studio will automatically launch it from as an out-of-browser application, as you can see here. For the rest, it's still the same application. I can close whatever I want because it can be installed on the machine. I can remove it. It's not installed. In this case, it's simply hosted from Visual Studio. But I can install it. I can put a shortcut on my desktop, or in my start menu, whatever you want. Now, I talked about the last line in the previous slide was COM component access. And that's a really important one. Remember in the beginning, I was talking about the fact that Silverlight can, apart from the webcam and the microphone, access other hardware. It can do so. Because if that other hardware employs a COM component to communicate, Silverlight can access it. For example, a scanner that works over a COM interface, Silverlight can communicate with it. So that means that all kinds of COM interrupt is possible. Office, text-to-speech, other hardware, all those things are possible in Silverlight 4. The COM component, however, cannot be part of the Silverlight installation, of the Silverlight application. The COM component has to be available on the system upfront. And then you can do whatever you want with it. So what I implemented in my application is export to Excel. One note, this is the one thing that doesn't work on the Mac at this point. Mac has no COM support, so it cannot work on the Mac. So in the future, perhaps AppleScript will be supported. That's something that Microsoft mentioned. So perhaps that will work in the future, but as of now, this doesn't work on the Mac. So if I run it again, and I go to this screen here, Card Reports, this is the people that actually read my card already. As you can see here, Bill Clinton and Bill Gates already read it. Barack is still waiting. So I want to export this to Excel. There we go. It's opening Excel now. A bit too big. And all this data is now inside of my application. My application is now in Excel. So with that, I am actually happy with my application. It is running. It is an end-to-end application. I'm going to put this back out of browser, disable that again. Now, I'm happy with the application. I think the people of TDD are as well. But an important question, and that's more or less the link to the second talk of this afternoon. The big question is, can we move this application to the cloud and still have it working like it is working now? And that's why I'm going to call Maarten, a good friend of mine, on stage already, and he's going to do the second talk.
Hey, Gilles.
Hey, Maarten.
How are you?
Fine. So, hi. Maarten, do you think that we can move this application to the cloud?
Do you have to move it to the cloud? That's the first and better question.
I think we have, because the people of TDD are expecting a lot of traffic on the site. So that's, I think, a very important requirement to put it in the cloud.
Okay, that's a good reason. Well, I think you can move the application. I saw you build it. I saw you use the WCF service.
It's a regular service, yes.
I saw you stored the files on the hard disk of your server, so that should be possible to move also.
The images that are created are stored on the web server in this case, yeah?
Yeah. Well, I think in short it's feasible to move this to the cloud.
Okay, so that's going to be the topic of the next session.
Okay, I invite you all to the next session.
Okay. With that, I'm out of time, I think. So I thank you for listening. If you have any questions, please come forward, and we'll do them in separate. So I thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this session. And as I said, we're going to take the same application, put it in the cloud in the second part. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the day.